أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماءه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتهدون الذي لا يدركه بعد الحمام ولا يناله غوث الفطن الذي ليس لصفته الحد المحدود ولا نعت الموجود ولا وقت المعدود ولا عجل ممدود ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين مبير الظالمين رحمة للعالمين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد أهل البيت يبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين إنما يريد الله ليذهب عنكم رجس أهل البيت ويطهركم تطهيرا
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
ولعن الله أعداءهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين أما بعد فقد قال الله وقوله الحق بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد كتبنا في الزبور من بعد ذكري إن الأرض يريثها عبادي الصالحون صلى الله على محمد وآل محمد From Ashur to Zuhur, a comparative analysis of the mission of Imam Hussein with that of our 12th Imam has been our ongoing topic. And tonight is lecture number 9, I believe. As a quick recap, as we do every single night, just so we're on the same page moving forward, our lectures took a different turn about 3 nights ago, where we discussed initially a theoretical approach to the mission of the Imam, and then we introduced a practical approach to the mission of the Imam. We first made sure that there were no misconceptions, confusions, ignorances that may exist in the minds of all of us about our 12th Imam. We did our best across 5 days to remove those from our minds, and then we moved into an actual discussion on how to prepare for the Imam. And all throughout we used countless examples of the mission of Imam Hussein to make this analysis come home for us. We introduced the four pillars of a society according to the khutbah of Imam Hussein and alayhi salatu wassalam, salatu ala Muhammad wa alayhi. Who in khutbah Mina had outlined this picture for us of a system of government under the wali of Allah. And we said the first pillar of that society is that God will be a parent. And that led us to a discussion that the practical approach is for us to adopt that within ourselves now and not wait for the Imam to come to establish it. And of course, that led us to a discussion about sincerity, establishing sincerity inside of us, and removing the roadblocks of sincerity, mainly being egoism and this self-love that we talked about yesterday. This me, this I did this, I did that, I did this. Today we want to explore another pillar of this society, and that being living an Islamic life. Again, we're trying to establish a sense of reform inside of us where we can be looked at and people can say that yes, this person is right now in the state of waiting for the Imam. Why? Because he has taken the steps now to change himself. I mentioned this time and time again, that the preparation for the Imam's mission is directly related to us changing ourselves. And every mission of the Imams and all the Prophets across the board was all about bringing humanity into human form. Imam Hussein in countless khutbahs have said that I'm leaving Medina and Mecca and the comforts of my home for the islah of my ummah, the change of my ummah. And the mission of our 12th Imam is no different. So we have work to do. And this misconception that is very, very popular amongst us that fine, I'll wait for the imam, and when he comes, I'll do something, has to be removed from our minds. Otherwise, we will not prepare for the imam. Now, today, of course, there are several things to discuss. We have ultimately two lectures left, tonight and tomorrow. As Mahdi announced, my last speech is Monday, and that's more of a conclusion. Tuesday morning, I fly out of here. And Sunday, of course, is the day of Ashura. So in these 2 days, like I said, there's a lot to discuss, and we'll try to do our best to kind of make sure that we express it properly, not just cram it in. But along this passion or this path of the Islamic life, we want to make sure that we talk about the effects of reform on us and on society. That's very important. First discussion tonight. The first thing that we have to understand is that the moment we approach this path of reform and we begin to change ourselves, our perception also changes. Our dark, as they say, our perspectives also change. What ends up happening is that as you begin to reform yourself, the first step in reforming is self-diagnosis, as I keep mentioning. It's to first diagnose yourself to know what's wrong and then fix yourself. A doctor doesn't write a prescription right away. He asks you what are your symptoms, he might run some tests, and based on that, he writes you a prescription. When it comes to reforming our deficiencies in our soul, we go through the exact same process. Introspection, self-reform, self-diagnosis, what are my issues, what are my problems, and then we reform ourselves. As we do that, what ends up happening is probably the most effective thing that could happen to us, we become tolerant individuals. As we search for faults within us, we become tolerant for the faults of others. What we don't have in our communities, unfortunately, or very, very little of, is tolerance. We accept the fact that we're fallible beings. Every single one of us, we're fallible. We make mistakes. And we beg to Allah to forgive us, correct our mistakes, have mercy on us. That we understand. But when someone else makes a mistake for us or to us, our tolerance is not there. We ask ourselves, how can a person make that mistake? Knowing full well that you expect that mercy from God, but you're not willing to give that mercy out to other individuals. And that's become the downfall of our communities, unfortunately. Otherwise, you know, the very basic step in Tawheed, the very basic discussion in Tawheed, is to make Tawheed a practical approach. And how do you do that? You discuss the sifats and the attributes of God, and then you become a manifestation of those attributes. If you believe God to be merciful and forgiving, then for you to apply practically Tawheed inside of you, you now have to become forgiving and merciful. Otherwise, Tawheed becomes a theoretical approach, and that's not what we're after. We're after living Tawheed, not only believing in it. And one of the approaches, like I said, is to adopt those attributes that we beg Allah, please Allah, forgive us, but we don't forgive others. So the first effect that we have in communities is we become tolerant individuals. Tolerance right now cannot be found, unfortunately. The second thing, and most importantly, is that you begin to see the signs of God everywhere. And to bring this point home, you know, they have a story where there was a woman who was a staunch believer in God. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I'm not sensing that everyone's here with me right now, so let's get refocused here for a moment, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Because as you know, the way that we operate in terms of the 12 days is momentum is being built. And now the momentum has reached its peak. I have 2 nights with all of you left. And so now the things that I've saved for these nights, like I said, are the crux of the issue. So stay with me for a moment. There was a woman who was a staunch believer in God. She loved Allah, everything she saw was God, and she lived beside an atheist. And she would leave her windows open, and she would praise God all day. And this would irritate the atheist. And so one day he decides to make a plan to really teach her a lesson, but there's no God, Wad. He says to himself that I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to buy her groceries. 2 bags full of groceries. He goes to the store, he buys 2 bags full of groceries. Follow me for a second. He puts it on her doorstep, he rings her doorbell, and he hides. She opens the door and she sees 2 bags of groceries. Oh, ho, 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 ho. She's so happy. Allah, you're the best. Allah, you're the greatest. You are the Razik. You are the one who provides constantly. I didn't even ask, and you're the one that gave it to me. At that moment, the atheist comes out of the corner. He says, "You foolish woman. It wasn't your God who bought the groceries. It was me." And then she gets even more happier. She says, "Oh my God, God, you are the best. I can't believe today you've reached the limit. Not only have you bought me groceries, but you had Shaitan pay for it as well." Salat ala Muhammad wa ala. So in every situation, you can see God. And that's the effect of reform. Even when you're going through troubles and some mushkilats and some issues in your life, you have to be able to clutch the rope of God. There's a reason why our prophets went through such extreme tribulations to test their faith. We have in our traditions that these mushkilats and these stresses that cause us so much stress in our life, for an unbeliever it's azab, it's punishment. For a believer it's a test. And for the prophets it's what's called darajat. Where you can test an individual. They tested Nabi Ibrahim, it's in the Quran. And the result of that test is that Allah gave him imamat. And this was a way of Allah seeing, how faithful are you to me? So we have to be able to see God in everything, even the problems that we face every single day. So two very important impacts. There are several more, but let's move on to something else. One is tolerance in our community. We have to learn to be tolerant. My brothers and my sisters, you are a flawed individual. I am a flawed individual. I make mistakes, you make mistakes. If you're willing to accept that you are a person who makes mistakes, then forgive the mistakes of others. But we hold on to this for years and years. We don't talk to the individual. We don't attend their programs. Why? Because 10 years ago they said something, did something, and they hold on to it. That's not good for us. Our nafs becomes black. We don't progress anymore. It becomes a blockage for us. Let's try to remove that. And the only way to remove that, like I said, is to begin to introspect inside of you. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The other thing that I want to make sure that all of our parents understand is sincerity can be taught at home, number one. And the environment at home is extremely crucial in this development of sincerity for my young kids as well. Somebody will call and your kid picks up the phone. Hello? Yeah, is Baba there? In the back, your dad's saying, "I'm not here. No, no." And the kid says, "What? I'm not here. I'm not here." He says, "Yeah, my dad's saying he's not here right now." What are you teaching that child? We've all done it, I'm sorry to say. But what are you teaching that child? So sincerity is important for in the home, first of all. Now, the other issue that we have is in this progress, in this pursuit to live an Islamic life. I mentioned this 2 nights ago very, very briefly, that we have presented Islam to our youth as a set of laws, and that's it. Right? Islam is halal and haram, Islam is jais and najais, Islam is makruh and mubah, and that's it. That's all it is to us. And the problem is that we don't understand when someone up here is saying, look, Islam is a system of life, guys, not a set of laws. One pillar of Islam is fiqh. One pillar of it. That's it. The other pillars are theology and morality. And we believe that as long as I pray salat and as long as I fast, doesn't matter what kind of person I am, I'm a good Muslim. You have to encompass these things all together. One portion of the pie, like I said, is fiqh and the actual rulings. But we presented Islam to be just a series of yeses and nos. Don't do this, don't go here, don't eat this. That's it. And the problem lies that when our youth can't follow those laws or break those laws or have trouble maintaining those laws, they run from the path. And they think, you know what, I can't do it. It's too hard for me. Shaitan's too powerful, I'm too weak, I live in the West. Come on Islam, what do you expect from me? The presentation has been bad for our youth. Well, the example I often give, it's a funny one, but you know, I'll use it. Somebody... Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I am, excuse me. I am a big fan of a steak dinner. Who isn't? A good sirloin steak with some mushrooms and mashed potatoes, some toasted bread, a nice glass of Diet Coke. Has to be Diet Coke. Now, this is my ideal meal, right? If I could have an ideal meal, you know how they ask, you know, those guys who are on death row, that before you die, what do you want to eat? And they think, oh, what is my last meal on this earth? If I was ever asked that question, it'd be a steak dinner. Now, if somebody takes that dinner and takes the lid of a garbage can, follow me, a lid of a garbage can, flips it upside down and puts that meal on it and says, here you go, Mr. Jeffrey, this is your dinner. I wouldn't come 10 feet near that thing. It's not the dinner, it's the presentation of that dinner. It's that lid that dinner is on. We claim that Islam is a solution for mankind. We can't find a solution within our four walls. Because the presentation of our deen to our youth has been incorrect. Islam is not a religion for Thursdays and Fridays. It's not a weekend religion. We don't claim to love Jesus and do whatever you want outside. That's not us. We are those individuals who live Islam. This is Islam that tells you what day to cut your nails, my brothers. That tells you what finger to start cutting your nails. How much detail do you want? What foot to enter the bathroom? What foot to exit the bathroom? This is a system of life. What color of clothes to wear? Who to marry? How many times to marry? All these things are there. It's not just so you can pray and you can fast and you're good to go. The problem lies in this. Now, because this presentation has been such, we have a lack of moderation in our societies. Moderation, moderation. Our Ahlul Bayt thrived on this idea of moderation. We have extremes in our community. We have extremes in our community. Either you found the path, I found God, and you become so religious that your beard is out to here, every second word is mashallah, mashallah, you can't talk to you anymore. You ask them about the Lakers game, I don't watch basketball anymore. All these things are just extremes. Or the other extreme is that we come from a Islamic nation from over that side of the world. We come here and in our process to assimilate, we shave the beard, we go from Jaffrey to Jeff. We're at lunch with our family, a business guy calls, say, yeah, Jeff speaking. And your kids say, who's Jeff? But all in this process to what? To assimilate in this society. That's one extreme. Islam says, no, find a path in the middle. Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. Talks about Amr bayn al-Amrain, that path that's down the middle. And this discussion came about when? This talk about free will or predestination. It's not my topic, I don't want to go down that path. But Imam Sadiq, when he was asked, are we completely free or are we predestined? He says, we are both, we are right down the path. And the example that he gives is somebody approaches him and says, how can you tell me that we're both free and predestined? And I'll share this hadith and I'll move on. I don't want to explain it. He says that you're standing there right in front of me. He says, lift one leg up. The man lifts one leg. He says, lift the other one up at the same time. He says, I can't do it. He says, that's how much you are free will and how much you are predestined. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Can I please ask all of you to please move forward? And with that, please allow salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. In the middle, there's lots of room there, please. Asant. Ya Ali, Ya Ali. Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, salawat. So we're talking about this idea of you accepting and you adopting a sense of moderation in your deen. Like I said yesterday, no one's asking you to hate the dunya. This dunya is yours. But like I said, at what cost? You have to live for this dunya and live for the akhirat. Find that moderation inside of you. And that moderation is what's lacking in our systems. When it comes to our grief, when it comes to our happiness, we don't have moderation, I'm sorry. We have a hadith that where Allah tests us the most is when we are at the utmost level of grief and the utmost level of happiness. I mentioned this several times. Our weddings are how in our communities? A family who all year round, you know, they're hijabi, they're muttaqi, they're religious, mashallah. They have one daughter, two daughters. And they only have one wedding to show off, you know. They go all out. Their hijab goes off, the music comes on. Oh, it's one day, it's not a big deal. Moderation. And grief, of course, these 10 days are a prime example of grief. We can't understand how an alim in Qum or anywhere else can tell us how to grieve for Imam Hussein. I will grieve the way I want to grieve. If that grief is causing Islam harm, that grief is wrong. It's extreme grief. You want to grieve for Imam Hussein? You grieve within the guidelines of what the Maraja tell you. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. But we don't understand that. We become so personal. Why our grief goes to extremes? We look at our own personal grief. These extremes have to be removed from our society. If you do wake up tomorrow and think, you know what, I'm going to tread the path of Islam, that does not mean that you can't enjoy a nice coffee, a second cup or whatever. I don't want to mention the Starbucks name, but that doesn't mean that at all. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy a good NBA game or a good NFL game or go to the Thrashers game. It doesn't mean that. Enjoy it. But the extremes have got to be removed from our community. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. If we can find moderation in everything that we do, then we can find success. See, philosophy tells us that a preparation for any mission is blocked by two ingredients, fear and ignorance. The reasons why some of us fear death, and ulama have of course researched this topic, the fundamental reason is a fear of the unknown. We have no idea what's going to happen. No one has gone there, come back and told us. And fear of the unknown, and the way some of us handle that fear of the unknown is that we simply block it out of our minds. You know, Asad Rizvi is offering kafans now. He bought some kafans from Saudi. And he was telling me that as he was setting up his station back there, there were people who were literally just kind of making sure that the kafan wouldn't touch their clothes. As if to say that if the kafan touched their clothes, then God said, oh, now he's ready for death. Send Malakul Maud down now. But it's not going to happen that way. In fact, I was telling us, I go, look, set up a mock coffin. Tell him, try on the coffin, sit in the coffin. If you like it, then take it home with you. Can you imagine for a moment? But this fear of death inside of us, I don't know where it comes from. Yes, the unknown is one aspect of it. The other aspect is that we know what's going to be awaiting for us in our grave. We know our amal more than anybody else does. And the problem sometimes that I find, I myself do it. I find individuals come and they can openly just confess that, you know what, I know that it's wrong, but I can't do it. The moment you hear yourself do it, fix yourself immediately. Do your best to fix, ask your mom for help. If you know that this is something wrong you're doing, then do your best to fix it. Confessing that it's wrong doesn't make it any easier or won't erase it from your book of Amal. So the fear of death, for example, and because we fear it, we don't prepare for it. So the idea of taking a kafan home is, oh my God, no way am I taking a kafan home. But my request to you is take a kafan home. Prepare for death. Know that that's going to be you wrapped up one day. And so we have to understand that the mission of the imam is the exact same thing. Because we have fear of it maybe, or because we're ignorant of it, our preparation suffers. Now how can you remove that fear, for example, the fear of death? How can you remove it? You can ensure that even though I've left this world, I've left something behind to make sure it constantly feeds me and helps me in my judgment, in my grave or in barzakh, for example. We have a whole process, a whole situation here of sawab al-jariyah. This idea that you do something in this world, that as long as it's being done and being taken care of, the sawab, the blessings goes to you. Whether it be, you know, a good son or a good daughter, you planted a tree, you opened a school, you donated money, whatever the case may be. If we have this fear inside of us, a fear inside of us of death and what's going to happen afterwards, we won't prepare for it. So I'm asking you to remove that fear. How? by doing what you can while you are alive in this world to ensure that you plant the seeds that even though you're not in this world, those seeds grow for you. And provided that keeps on growing, you'll keep receiving those blessings. But for, you know, for some reason we have this stamp of life that, okay, at least till 80, 85 I'll live. At least. That stamp is not there. And so one of the ways that you can assist and make sure you plant those seeds is by making sure that these four walls where Imam Hussein is being remembered, Imam Zaman is being remembered, the Ahlul Bayt are being remembered, if you can do anything you can to assist in the establishment of these four walls, you planted that seed that will assist you in the hereafter. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Belong to Zainabiyya, and Zainabiyya, mashallah, does its best to hold these programs all year round. And these programs don't come easy. They do their best to make sure the building looks nice. They've done renovations, mashallah. They're fixing up the kitchen, they're fixing the home there for the alim. They brought an alim in. These things are progressive things. I've been to centers that for 40 years at the exact same center. But I'd like to claim that Zainabiyya has a little bit of a progressive thought. They do their best to invite good English speakers. And when they can't find these speakers, they invite me. I said, look, we couldn't find anybody, you come. But this is your opportunity now to make yourself feel like this is part of your home. And at the moment you don't do that, you won't plant that seed to make sure that your preparation for death and the blessings after death will help you in this cause. Salat Bihajim Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. The Quran says that you cannot attain righteousness unless you spend in charity out of what you love. Out of what you love. The problem is, and this happens in my community too, the problem is that our centers have become dumping grounds. If a lamp doesn't work, let's donate to Zainabiyya. I'm sure they'll use it. Baba, it doesn't turn on. No, they can use it. And then you think, oh, you know what, I donated something big. I've done my part. You give him a broken lamp, you've done your part. The Quran is saying, out of what you love, donate that. Allah will increase your tawfiq, increase your risk, increase your sustenance. This economy is not booming right now. Everyone's looking and scraping for a dollar here and there. Allah is saying, this is the system. Give it, and I will give even more than that. So when I have your attention, let me call up a trustee, Dr. Chuhan, please, to address all of you. Salat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.